Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
Hello, this is Griffin McElroy.
And this is wonderful.
Do you feel us in the room with you or the car? You're probably not in a car. You're probably in a room. Do you feel us there? A lot of people talking about the lack of sort of physical intimacy in these trying times, and I do not want to cross any boundaries, but I just want to say we're right there in the room with you.
Hey, who's that attractive couple over in the corner in the beanbag chair?
Listen to you. Who's that? Hold on. Who's that sexy, tight-bodied, hilarious
couple?
Who's
that muscular man over there with that stunning woman?
Who's that hot-bodied, sexual... This is wonderful. This is a show where we talk about things that are good, things that we like, things that we're into. And, you know, we want to be there for you in a way that is socially responsible. And that's why we do what we freaking do, man.
Yes.
You don't need a mask for your ears to listen to this show unless that's what you call ear headphones. And that's a thing I've been trying to think of a good way of saying that for a long time.
Uh-huh.
I think it still needs work. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, don't give up.
I never, ever do. And how are you doing? How's your heart and your spirit and your soul?
You know, it changes hour to hour. Right now, I feel good.
I feel great right now.
Yeah.
I felt like dog shit earlier.
Yeah.
In the week. But now I feel like a million bucks.
There are no longer good days or bad days. There are like good hours and bad hours for me.
Oh, no. For me, it's not good days and bad days. It's like fucking apocalyptic end of the world days. And then like pretty good. I want to, you know, do some swing dancing.
Hug a tree.
I want to. Well, no. But I want to listen to Zuzu Riot. That's where I get why I'm in it. Do you have any small wonders?
I do. And I forgive me if we've talked about this before, but I want to say pesto.
Huh, interesting. Pesto.
Have we talked about pesto?
Oh, I don't think so. It's the ideal form that like vegetation can enter your body in, I think. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Above any cooked vegetables and above eating grass, pesto is it, man.
Yeah. I mean, you can make a lot of different kinds of pesto. Mm. What we have been digging on lately is the basil kind, you know, with the nuts in it and the Parmesan cheese.
Sure.
It makes everything feel fancy, I feel like.
Yeah.
You know, like, for example, we've been, you know, hitting it on the pasta lately. You know, you could put a red sauce on it, but ho-hum, why not a pesto? That's a fancy meal.
I love a good red sauce. You make a killer red sauce, but yeah, occasionally you want to mix it up with some green because the color's different.
Yeah.
I'm going to say the video that we saw, that our friend Anna posted on Twitter of, it's at a Twista concert, and Twista raps very quickly. A very, very expedient rapper. And there is a video of an ASL interpreter on stage just fucking dropping it.
Just like, the best in the biz.
Like Twista's doing a verse that is just like, you know, very Twista-y, extremely, extremely, extremely fast. And just seeing this woman like ASL it. Like,
yeah,
so fucking quick, but not just like, it's not even like frantic and fast, like it's still like smooth as fuck, like it's still like to the beat and like choreographed, and she's like kind of bouncing to it. It is the best. Like,
I love
thing.
There's this moment where he just like literally goes and stands next to her and just watches her,
and the audience is so powerful. The audience is like losing it. It's so good. I wish I could. I don't really know what if you Google ASL interpreter Twista, probably get there. I highly recommend watching this video. It is
it's a beautiful
so
thing.
Fucking fresh. I think I've seen stuff with her before. I feel bad that I cannot remember her name. But she's like she's known for like. Doing ASL at concerts like this, and like adding a sort of musical, sort of like rhythmic flair to it, which I'm sure she's not the only one doing it, but like she's the one who I've like seen do it. But watching her keep up with Twista is like fucking amazing.
Yes.
It's so good. I don't know who goes first because we kind of got off our usual schedule with our self-care sedan last week. Thank you. We got so much fan art of our self-care sedan.
It is so awesome.
I don't think we knew. We were a little not confident in that episode because we were a little sort of down in the dumps, but I'm glad that people hopped in the whip with us. So why don't you go first?
Okay. My first topic is dance movies.
Mm. Yeah.
Movies with the dancing.
This is, at first blush, a fairly broad category.
Yeah. Okay. No, and I'm gonna break it down into kind of two distinct groups. Obviously, there's the movie musical,
right,
which often will have dancing, particularly like West Side Story in Chicago, where dancing is really a prominent feature.
Yes.
And then there's the movies in which the characters dance because they are either trying to be better dancers or are trained dancers.
Okay.
In the films.
Right.
I'm going to primarily talk about those.
Oh, okay. Interesting. So not a break into Electric Boogaloo, but more of a Dirty Dancing.
Yes.
Okay. Fantastic.
Yes. I have a real long list of, you know, Teen Vogue did a list of like the best dance movies.
Okay.
And I realize I've seen a lot of them, okay. Like more than half.
You enjoy a dance. You turn me on to, what is it? Not America's Next. So You Think You Can Dance.
Yeah.
So You Think You Can Dance. You were big into that show.
The Brilliance of Travis Wall.
Travis Wall makes a good dance. And yeah. I don't think I really appreciated the form of it or how much you appreciated the form of it until we watched that show together.
I took dance classes from like age 3 to like age 17. Mm-hmm. I'm not particularly good. I'm not asking you to agree or disagree on this. I get very in my head about it. So when I was learning choreography, I'm very much like focused on like, is that the right hand or the left hand, left foot? Does left foot go first? Does it go in front of the right foot? Does it go behind the right foot?
That's so interesting.
It like really trips me up a little bit.
Because when I watch you play like a Dance Central,
yeah.
You're just elbows and knees just sort of flailing around, but like you at a wedding, like having fun,
yeah.
Like you're so fun to dance with.
Yeah.
Like,
choreography kind of trips me up a little bit. I get very focused on like, you know, doing it precisely, which
right.
is never a good recipe for dance.
No.
There was a kind of a golden age of dance movies that I will say is like 2000 to 2006, maybe.
Not a very long golden era.
Yeah. Well, so what really brought me to this category is Center Stage.
Oh, wow. I don't know that I've seen Center Stage.
The Peter Gallagher film.
Yeah. No, I know he's in it. Mm-hmm. And so it's a crying shame I haven't watched it.
It's like a super, like, it came out in 2000. It's like a super late 90s movie, though. There's like a lot of like late 90s fashion, like a lot of wedge shoes, a lot of sweaters around the waist.
Upon further investigation, I'm willing to put like 2000 to 2003 in the late 90s.
Okay.
Because we had not stepped it the fuck up yet, really.
Largely, that movie, not particularly great, but a lot of professional dancers in it.
Oh, okay.
Like the cast is largely people who like actually worked with ballet companies. And also a young Zoe Saldana.
Oh.
Yeah, she actually had dance background, was not obviously a professional dancer, later became a very successful professional actress.
Yes, yes.
But like pretty much everybody else in the cast like actually were like principal dancers in like San Francisco and New York. And so it's just like a really impressive film.
Is it your favorite of the dancing movies?
Oh, see, that's hard to say.
Oh, yeah.
That's hard to say. Another movie I enjoy came out just a year later called Save the Last Dance.
I know this one.
With the Julia Stiles.
Yeah. Was she in other dancing movies?
She believes that her table dancing in 10 Things I Hate About You is what landed her the role in Save the Last Dance.
I always think of her as being somebody who is in a lot of dance movies, but
yeah,
I think
the internet is conflicted as to whether or not she has professional training.
Wow. this is like a Mandela effect thing.
I think part of it is that she probably just took dance classes kind of informally.
Right.
And that is her training. There's also a suggestion of whether or not she did her own dancing in the film.
Okay.
She says
is it CGI,
she did.
Like the Ally McBeal baby. Is
well,
that what it was?
The only thing that she has claimed or like accepted that she did not do is like the point scenes where she's up on her toes. So they used to stand in for that.
God, that would hurt. I know there's people that really enjoy watching ballet, and I have nothing against the craft, except to say that when I do see them standing on their tippy tippies, I can't. It's hard to look at that because I think about just sort of the bones in there and what real troopers there be.
Yeah, I always wanted to do it. My little community dance classes, it was kind of like an offshoot of like, hey, if you want to be doing this on point, you can do it. But it was never really pushed because the shoes are expensive and it's very difficult.
And the toes are expensive.
Yes.
The toe meat and the bones in there, they're quite pricey.
Uh-huh. So Save the Last Dance, again, like not an incredible film. The choreographer for it, Fatima Robinson, has done choreography for Michael Jackson, Aaliyah, Mary J. Blige, Black Eyed Peas, Meghan Trainor. She's pretty like illustrious. So the choreography is really good. She also did choreography for The Wiz and Dreamgirls.
Ooh. Mm-hmm.
So she's pretty accomplished.
Yeah, I'll say.
So that's 2000, 2001. There are films I haven't seen, like Honey and Step Up.
Mm.
That came out in 2003, 2006.
Step Up was the sort of launch pad for the Channing Tatum. Okay. Yes. And Jenna
Dewan.
Yes.
Yeah. Who has the dance show that we've watched too.
Oh God. That's right.
Yeah.
That I can never remember the name of.
Yeah. I can't either. The premise of the show is that people go on a blind date, but the blind date is just dance choreography that they have learned individually and now have to do together.
Yeah.
And then they decide if they want to go on a second date after their dance performance.
It's something else. It's really something else.
Another film I haven't seen, I haven't seen Magic Mike. I have seen Magic Mike XXL.
Oh, God.
Speaking of Channing Tatum.
That movie whips ass. It's so good.
So good. Channing Tatum, I looked him up because, you know, he's become quite well known for his dancing ability. From what I can tell, he does not have any real dance training. Hmm. He just kind of leaned into it.
That gives me hope, huh?
He's just a powerful man.
Yeah.
There are a lot of other films, a lot of documentaries about dancing, a lot of American adaptations of international films. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it so much. It's so fun to watch. It's such a nice, like, athletic component of a film. And to be able to act on top of that is just always, it's charming.
Would you watch Break Into Electric Boogaloo with me? If I could find it digitally. I bet it's on YouTube somewhere.
I mean, are the dance performances remarkable?
Do you like B-boy shit?
Sure.
Then yeah.
Okay.
You're going to enjoy it.
I would watch it.
There's some...
Now, should I watch the first Break-In?
You kind of have to.
Okay.
It sets up the whole cinematic universe. I've never actually seen the first Break-In. Okay. We bought... me and my friend Justin Minsker bought Break-In to Electric Boogaloo on DVD. He may have gotten it for me for like a present or something like that, but it was like a joke because the name of the movie is so outrageous.
Uh-huh.
And then we watched it and we were like, it's so silly. Let's watch it immediately again. There's a part where somebody like has a first kiss with somebody that they are into, and then they go into this room and they start dancing, and then they start walking on the walls and dancing on the walls and dancing on the ceiling in this like completely uncut, just like dancing all over the walls of this room thing. That's like, it is hypnotic.
I mean, just quickly, I want to mention, obviously there's, you know, Footloose and Dirty Dancing and Black Swan and any number of other dance films, too many to mention.
I would argue Black Swan is maybe not mostly about the choreography.
There is
dance
some incredible
itself.
Dancing in it.
Sure.
Not as lighthearted as, say, a Dirty Dancing.
Yeah. My first thing is just as sort of artistically enriching a piece of content as dance-based videos, especially one of just sort of like ballet and really smart stuff like that. My first topic is pressure washing videos.
Oh, satisfying, yes, for sure.
I didn't actually check to make sure we have not talked about this before. We really need to get better about that. Uh-oh. Oh, no. I typed pressure into wonderful.fyi and it got a result. I was like, oh shit. But it was Under Pressure, the song. We've not talked about pressure washing before. Isn't it sad that like I kind of thought that is the type of thing that we have for sure talked about before? Anyway, I, you know, my algorithms are fucking garbage at this point. It's all like, at this point, it is... like Final Fantasy 14 walkthrough videos almost exclusively, and also there's like a side category of just some shit.
And Chef Club. Don't forget about Chef Club.
Well, that's in Facebook. I'm talking about specifically like YouTube.
Oh, okay.
Facebook, I do get. So Facebook, it's still like we made a table out of reclaimed wood and resin. And doesn't it kind of look like a river? Or we made some sort of weird hot dog cake. Enjoy that. I don't even see pictures of like kids, like my friends' kids anymore. Now it's exclusively resin tables and hot dog cakes, like mm-hmm. all the way down.
Mm-hmm.
Pressure washing videos is just sort of the latest chapter in my garbage video feed.
Should we mention that we have never pressure washed?
I've never pressure washed anything. Here's the thing about pressure washing. I find videos of pressure washing very hypnotic, might I even say seductive. The power of pressure washing videos really, really enraptures me. If you're not aware, pressure washing is... the technology of it is a little bit beyond me, but from what I understand, this machine forces a tremendous amount of water through a very, very small cavity.
You put your thumb over a hose?
Yes.
It's like that times
an infinity.
Times a lot.
and you point that at a driveway, and it cleans the ever-loving shit out of that driveway.
Yeah.
Insert whatever here. Anything that has deep baked on grime, dirt, stuff that I don't even know what the fuck. Like, you look at a driveway, you sweep it, and you're like, that driveway's clean. And then you bring in a pressure washer, and the pressure washer's like, no, idiot, you're only seeing the like layers of dead driveway skin that are on top of that. And when I remove that, it's going to elevate it.
Different
hue.
I'm a little scared of it myself.
Yes.
I like watching other people do it, but I am perpetually worried that anything that we pressure wash would crumble.
Explode.
Yeah.
Well, our house has some stucco siding on it. It's a little nasty. Like, I wish we could just point a pressure washer right at it. But our realtor, when we bought the house, was like, don't do that. You will punch a hole in the fucking house and it will collapse. Billy, everybody's kind of afraid of a pressure washer.
Yeah, yeah.
I think if you pointed it at a car, it'll like strip the paint off the, like it's a tremendous amount of force.
Yeah.
But I'm all about, I feel like I've talked about this on the show before, like, I'm all about, like, the hidden, like, worlds of everyday sort of reality, and there is nothing sort of more instantaneous, a revelation than a pressure washing video where you point it at a driveway, and you're like, I know what that driveway looks like, and then you just sort of effortlessly sweep this magic wand across it, and it's like, oh, shit. That's what that actually looks like. A big one for me is the interiors of pools, where you see it, and somebody could have just scrubbed the interior of this like pool, that like sort of synthetic like tiley material, and then you spray it with the pressure washer, and like I watched a video where I was like, oh, that's like a nice little aquamarine pool interior that somebody's done some real primo work on, and then they just spray it, and it's like, actually, it's a completely different sort of thing, and that was, what was on there? There's a moment of terror of just like, what was on? I've been touching that. My car wheels have been touching that dirty ass driveway this whole time.
Yeah.
My kids have been doing chalk drawings on that, and it's just covered in what, tar and shit? I don't know.
I think it is the magic wand element. I think that's really what speaks to us.
I this bit is going to make you upset, but there's a part of me that I think actually enjoys the concept of cleaning and things being clean. It's never something that like I prioritize. You may not believe this. I'm better about it now. When I was like in college and living by myself, it was a fucking disaster area. Like I was okay with living in a level of filth that you would find absolutely jaw dropping.
Here's a question. This is a good question. As I've become an adult, I'm not particularly clean, but I have lived with a lot of people that are not clean. And the biggest indicator I find is how often you wash your sheets.
Yeah.
When you ask somebody that, the answer they give you will tell you a lot about how clean they are.
Yeah. For me, never. I don't really, I'm okay with that.
And I'm only like a once a month person. Like I'm not even, you know, particularly fastidious.
That feels fastidious. I'm really showing my hand quite a bit. If for me, it needs to be a sort of visible a clutter, if there's like a visible clutter, like my office right now is like on the precipice. Like I probably need to, there's just some shit laying on the floor. Like I would like to get rid of some of that. The sheets that like, that has my stink and sweat and dead skin and whatever. Like I can't see that. I don't care. I just enjoy the sort of extreme home makeover transformation of just like, it's like we have a new driveway, yes, Denise.
Yes, exactly.
But also, I think that it's just you watch a pressure washing video and there's a grim part of your mind that is just fascinated by the dangerous, raw power of the pressure.
Yes,
there is a respect. That's I think Poe, Edgar Allan Poe talked about that sort of macabre fascination with pressure washers specifically.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I get served a lot of them these days. I get served also a lot of, we're going to detail the shit out of this car, which is also hilarious considering I've never had that done to a vehicle ever before. But it's I like it. It's like a new thing. It's taking something and making it new.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of which, let's renew this podcast by pressure washing it with advertisements. Can I steal you away?
Yes.
Can we talk about these Grammatrons?
Yes.
Here's one for Casserole, and it's from Kyrie, who says, thanks for being a wonderful partner and even better friend. There's no one else I'd rather navigate life's chaos with. Here's to figuring things out, coping with some late night Animal Crossing, and listening to our fave podcasts together. We got this.
Can I tell you something embarrassing?
Sure.
I have never had or participated in a meteor shower in Animal Crossing. And part of that is I'm just not as committed to late night Animal Crossing as perhaps I should be.
You are a real early worm. That's not what they call them.
Once Nook's Cranny closes, you're like, done. See you tomorrow.
What's the point? What are you going to do? Catch some bugs and sell them at an 80% loss? No, thanks. That's ridiculous. You want to read the next one?
Yeah, this is for Donna and Raphael. It is from Glitch. Donna, you and Raphael are the two most wonderful people in my life. You're always there for me, whether it's to comfort me while I cry or to kick my butt at games. You also feed me all the delicious food. I'm so glad you two got married and that I was there beside you when you said I do. I love you.
That's so sweet.
That is super sweet.
But you gotta get your game, step it up, and come to my Griffin McElroy Gamer Camp.
Oh my God.
If you're getting your butt kicked at games, come to Griffin McElroy's Gamer Camp. I'll make you win at any videos games. I'm talking about Halo.
Yeah.
Super Mario Party.
Yeah.
Fucking
Zelda, the Zelda one.
Zelda. Well, that doesn't typically have a multiplayer component, but Logical Island of the Zumbinis.
Ooh.
Chex Quest.
Oh, is that?
Cool Spot. Any of these games that you're getting your ass whipped at, I got you. Come to Griffin McElroy's Gamer Camp. It's
how many weeks?
It's $500. It's like a day.
Oh.
It's like an afternoon. But we do provide lunch.
Which is Mountain Dew.
Which is just gamer fuel Mountain Dew, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Max Funsters. It's Jesse Thorne. This week on my public radio interview show, Bullseye, I'm talking with Tina Fey and Robert Carlock about creating Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, 30 Rock, and also just kind of why they're the best at everything.
There was a window of time when we would just go to awards things and pick up our prizes and party with the people from Mad Men.
You can find Bullseye at MaximumFun.org or wherever you listen to podcasts. Just search for Bullseye with Jesse Thorne.
Hey, what's your second thing?
My second thing are poet laureates.
All of them?
Just the whole concept, the whole position.
Of you're the best poet.
Just the honorary distinction itself.
Is there a dance laureate? Because to tie it back to your first point, is there ever like a thing where it's like somebody gets a medal and it's like, you are the country's best dancer?
Well, that's not really what poet laureate is.
Come on.
But there should be a dance laureate. I agree with you on that.
Yeah.
You know, I've mentioned the position of poet laureate a lot on this show because a lot of the poets I choose have received that distinction, but I didn't actually really know much about it. I just knew that it was a title you could get, and it was kind of like the kind of the biggest one you could get?
I clearly have just shown that I don't know fucking anything about the position or its history.
Yeah, I had to do a little research because the concept seems crazy that like our government would prioritize poetry so much that there would be an official poet of the country.
And is, as far as I know, still kind of doing it. Like still, they just named a new poet laureate fairly recently, right? Maybe I'm wrong, but like in this current administration.
There's a 2019.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's strange to me.
Yeah. So it actually started as kind of a continuation of what was happening in the UK. This started in the US in 1937.
Hmm.
It is a position that is appointed by the librarian of the United States Congress and serves less than a year, typically, although there have been poet laureates that have served longer than that.
I say, try to kick me out of my poet laureate office.
The position does provide a stipend, and that stipend is $35,000 a year.
Hey, not bad.
Yeah, but you definitely can't live on that.
No, but you're probably not... You know, you're probably not saying I am my job is poet laureate, right?
Yeah.
It's like an honor, a prize or something.
Yeah, it is an annual stipend that is provided from a existing kind of endowment.
That's maybe why we're still doing poet laureates, is because $35,000 is not a tremendous amount of money in the grand scheme of the federal budget.
The responsibilities of this position are pretty light, and each poet has kind of made it their own. All the poet laureate has to do is present an annual lecture, and then they usually introduce poets at the library's poetry series.
Hmm.
Their whole job is to just kind of increase the greater appreciation of reading and writing poetry.
Cool. It's amazing that that is a thing.
Isn't that amazing that that is still a thing? So here's a few poet laureates and kind of what they've done. Maxine Kuman, who I've mentioned, I believe, on the show, started a popular series of poetry workshops, specifically for women. And then Gwendolyn Brooks met with elementary school students. She has a big presence in Chicago.
I recognize the name. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Joseph Brodsky initiated the idea of providing poetry in airports, supermarkets, and hotel rooms.
Okay.
Robert Pinsky, who I've also mentioned, mm-hmm. initiated the Favorite Poem Project. And then Billy Collins did a Poetry 180 project that distributed a poem to all high schools for every day of the school year.
Cool.
Isn't that cool? Before we move on, I just want to say the 2019 poet is Joy Harjo, who is the first Native American woman to be appointed U.S. Poet Laureate. She is a performer. Actually, I don't know if are you familiar with Brave New Voices?
Yes.
There was that, and there's like Deaf Poetry Jam.
Sure.
These are all like performance poetry, and you can find some Joy Harjo poems.
Back when my Facebook feed had any redeeming value at all, I used to see those pop up. And I like watch this incredible Brave New Voices performance before it was pressure washing videos.
So here's how Poet Laureate really took off in the U.S. There's actually, you may recognize this name. In 1936, philanthropist Archer M. Huntington provided an endowment for the maintenance of a chair of poetry of the English language in Library of Congress.
I mean, I recognize that the name is the same as the name of the city that I grew up in, but he's not like the Huntington that people know.
He is the adopted son of Collis P. Huntington.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay. Wow, fascinating. Collis P. Huntington, the founder of Huntington.
Yeah. Yeah. So he not only provided the endowment for this position, he was also a major benefactor of the American Academy of Arts and Letters, contributed extensively to the Hispanic Society of America, also founded the Brook Green Garden Sculpture Center in South Carolina, the Mariners Museum, and was involved in the founding of Newport News, Virginia.
Hot damn.
That was established in the late 19th century, largely through the efforts of his adopted father, Collis P. Huntington.
That's interesting. I had no idea that he was such a
They were just springing up cities all over the place.
Yeah.
So I think it's really kind of surprising that this position exists. I enjoy that it does. I can't imagine any president would do away with it.
I can imagine that. I can absolutely imagine that. It almost kind of seems like this administration has maybe forgotten that the position exists,
yeah.
And we're all just kind of trying to like stay quiet about it. So maybe they don't remember.
I hope this is something that continues. Yeah. As you can see, some of the poets that have had this position have really done a lot of work
of course.
To kind of spread the awareness of poetry, which of course is something that I care about a lot.
Yeah. Can I talk about my second thing? It'll probably be pretty quick, but I got very excited about it. My second thing is aromatics, the things that smell good when you cook them. And they're the first things that you cook in most dishes. I don't think I appreciated aromatics or how common they were until I started to do cooking seriously. And once you do, it is so eye-opening how every food has like the same two or three things in them. Specifically onions. I remember the first time I had the realization, I think it was probably during like the you know, when we started doing Blue Apron. And I was like, man, I sure have been cutting up a lot of onions lately. And then I was like, wait a minute. Every recipe in the whole universe has onions in it.
That's yeah, mean. If it is a savory dish, there are onions.
Odds are it's got onions in it. But really, onion is an aromatic that is a very, very common one. But every sort of culture, every sort of like way of cooking has different base level aromatics that once you kind of like look at them on a list, you really do realize why different cultures have food that tastes the way it does. And certainly like way smarter people than me can identify like why those became the aromatics. I'm sure like a lot of it has to do with geography and like what grows well in certain
yeah,
parts
exactly.
of the world. But I find it very, very, very fascinating that just like when you think of these different cultures and the flavors that their food sort of like brings to the table, no pun intended, it is largely because of the really core DNA based stuff that goes in like virtually everything that is cooked in those cultures. So you want to talk about French cooking. The mirepoix, I believe is what it's called, is like the holy trinity of aromatics. Very first thing you do, get some butter or some oil. I think it's typically butter for French cooking in a pan, and you're going to put some onions, carrots, and celery. Cook that in butter.
Yeah.
Usually the butter or oil or ghee or whatever is like what brings out the good stink in the aromatics. And that is going to serve as like the base. Everything else that you add that you like, you know, supplement in on top of that is what sort of gives it the specific flavor that you're going to cook. But that like core like depth of flavor comes from that. And across all French cooking, like it is almost like, you know, a universal that these three things are going to be in it. Those three vegetables are also the same components of a sofrito, which is in Italy, the common aromatics that
yeah,
are used.
Yeah.
But they use olive oil. Most Latin cuisines also have a sofrito, but it uses garlic, onions, bell peppers, and tomatoes in olive
yeah.
oil. And then, of course, like the things that they supplement it with are different, obviously, than French and Italian cuisine, where you have things like coriander and cumin. You have chilies, obviously, paprika, wine, and vinegar. Like the stuff that you add on top of that like really defines the flavor is obviously different from culture to culture. But there's so many commonalities between just those three things. Then you get into like Chinese dishes have an entirely different sort of sweet, where you do have garlic, but then you get scallions and ginger, of course.
Yeah.
Always cooked in oil, and then you have the stuff you add on top of it, like five spice and star anise, and you know, different kinds of chilies and shallots. Curry paste is also another sort of form of
yeah.
aromatics, where you have this thing that the flavor sort of originates out of, where you have shallots, garlic, and chilies. Is almost all for Thai curry. That is like the holy trinity for Thai curry. Cajun cuisine has its own thing where I forget specifically. I think it's I want to say onions, celery, and bell peppers.
Mm-hmm.
And that is like the basis of a lot of different Cajun cuisine.
Yeah.
I love this idea that there are these like just sort of like first building blocks, the foundation that you lay down before you cook a dish.
Yeah, I just kind of think about like laying out like a pasta or like a rice and then choosing which ingredients, and that's like what country you're going to.
Yeah, there's like a taxonomy, like a almost like a genealogy there, yeah. Of just like, well, I'm going to cook this thing. I'm going to make a red sauce. I know that I'm going to put these same things in it that have always gone in it for like across time and space.
Yeah, and your body just like knows like, oh, this is what nationality I'm eating right
yes.
now.
The other things that I really like about aromatics is, one, it's always the thing that like when you are making something in the kitchen and I walk by, I'm like, ooh, that smells good. It's always like I just start like, what you are smelling right now is onions being sweated out in oil, and maybe there's some garlic in there.
Yeah, exactly.
I've not done anything particularly fancy to them. What you're smelling are these two stinky vegetables that I have made hot in oil. But like there's this Pavlovian response in my mind of just like, uh-oh, someone's cooking. And on the same note, and this is really the only other thing I have about aromatics, when you cook aromatics, that is the moment where I always feel like I'm cooking. I'm not making some bullshit, like, you know, I'm not making dirt cake with pudding and mashed up Oreos. I'm fucking cooking.
Yeah.
I have chopped up, look how small I chopped up this garlic. Uh-huh. And now I have it in oil in a pan. I'm cooking like a big boy right now.
Yeah, there's like a chemical reaction happening that you caused.
Really transforming this. I can put gummy worms in the dirt cake and say that I'm cooking, but I'm really not making stinky vegetables hot in oil. That's capital C cooking. I really want to cook some onions right now.
Well, you know, you were talking, we have onions, we have carrots, we have celery.
Yeah.
We have butter. We could really get going.
We could get something going, huh?
Yeah.
Let's figure it out. Okay. Maybe tonight I'll just go down the kitchen, chop up them shits, put it in some butter, and put it in a pan without knowing what I'm going to do next.
Ooh, that's exciting.
That'd be fun, wouldn't it? Uh-huh. What comes out of that would almost certainly be bad. You'd be like, are you adding Honey Nut Cheerios? Yeah, I panicked. It was getting so hot. I don't know. Hey, do you want to know what our friends at home are talking about?
Yes, please.
Heather says, something I think is wonderful is getting into a band that has a large discography. Recently, I've started listening to ELO, that's Electric Light Orchestra, who've got a large catalog of albums, and being able to deep dive into decades of music from the same artist is so good.
Yeah.
ELO is like the perfect one of those. ELO is like the one where I remember I heard my former boss at Polygon, Chris Grant, sing a song at karaoke and thinking like, man, that song beats ass. What is that? And every time I have that realization, it's always Electric Light Orchestra. The first time I heard Telephone Line, I was like, man, this song kick. Who is this? And it's like, oh, it's the Mr. Blue Sky people. Yeah, they're fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
Marcus says, a wonderful thing that I've gotten into this past year is the sport of cricket. I only dove in after the Don Bradman Monster Factory, and it has been an ever-blooming rose that gets better and better. I've even found a team to play with in North Alabama.
Oh, my gosh. I would like to learn how to do that.
It is wild how arcane.
It seems very complicated to me.
Complicated isn't even the right word. I feel like it's maybe even easy to grasp the rules of it, but just the rules seem so wild.
Yeah.
Like so Calvin Bally in a way.
Did you actually learn any of the rules when you were
doing?
Okay.
No, I learned how to hit. I learned what button to press to hit the ball very far, and that seemed to make the points go up to a satisfactory level. So, yeah, I just took that and ran with it. Thanks to Bowen and Augustus for the use of our theme song, Money Won't Pay. Find a link to that in the episode description. And thank you to Maximum Fun for having us on the network.
Yeah, thank you, Maximum Fun, for hosting our show and all the other great shows. I would really encourage you to check it out. If you are a parent that has been perhaps struggling with parenting during this time, One Bad Mother is a solve. A salve, even.
It's not a. It won't solve necessarily the particular issue, but it is a salve. How do you say that?
I don't know. Salve? I could split the difference and say solve.
You just said it the same. You know, you just said it the same way. I think it's solve. Why can't we say this word?
Well, it's not a word you hear very often in our lines of work, which are not
Actually, my dad was an apothecary. So, yeah, he made a lot of unguents, a lot of poultices that he would rub on boils and what have you.
Ooh.
Okay. People get boils, Rachel. Sorry. Sorry. Hashtag sorry, not sorry about these boils.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.